For over 28 years, Aflac has been a champion, donating over $168 million to fight pediatric cancer and blood disorders, including sickle cell disease. This December, Aflac proudly joins 97.1 Wash FM and Children's National Hospital for the annual Wash for Kids Radiothon. Mark your calendars for December 14th and 15th for a heartwarming 14-hour live broadcast where you can join Aflac in their efforts to support the miracle work happening at Children's National. Save the date, tune in, and be a part of something extraordinary with Aflac.
Hi there, I'm Robert Rankin, and you're listening to the Geek Show. Oh, yes.
Hello, and welcome to a transitionary episode for the Geek Show. My name is Rob, and as ever, I'm joined by producer Rob in the person, though.
Hello.
If I had really long fingers, like a finger longer, I could touch him, but I don't.
Don't you go touching me.
Oh, that... if you're from the UK, that weird biscuit advert, how apparently growing a really long finger is a sign of being upper class and posh.
What?
But that's a thing. But anyway...
What?
Yeah, look out for that one. It's very Lynchian stroke Futurama, which is an odd crossover, which I never thought would ever happen. But yeah, we have to have a pseudonym. And I hope you've heard of the wrestler La Parka, who is now, he goes by La Park. He's a partly skeleton-dressed luchador who plays guitar with a chair. Well, I'm his long-lost cousin, La Noir, which means I've got like a really boring salaryman face, but like the most imaginative face you've ever seen. It's got loads of things going on.
Hang on, what?
You remember basically having a poke at La Noir.
Oh, right.
Because remember L.A. Noire was like, here is a game, right, where it had the most incredible face technology ever. So much so where it was on the heads of the actors to be perfect in what they were doing. Otherwise, you got it wrong. But the rest of the game, it was basically like Stickmen.
Yes.
So I'm La Noire. I'm a luchador who's in a really boring salaryman suit.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know how to process this.
Because, you know, luchadors, there's a thing I think we mentioned on the show before, how there's a department of wrestling in the Mexican government, how they protect the identities of luchadors, the ones who wear the masks, from public records. So you look on a wrestler's record, one who hasn't lost their match in a mask versus hair match or something, and you say, let's say, for sake of reference, Pentagon. And it'll say on the records, when you look at Wikipedia, what their real name is, and it'll say undisclosed, because it's public record for the government.
Just back up 1 second.
Yes.
Hair versus mask.
Yeah. So there's a match in which somebody's got really long hair and another person's got a match, and whoever loses the thing in question. So if the guy with long hair loses, he has his hair shaved. If the guy with the mask loses, he has his mask taken away.
Okay.
It happens quite a lot. Oh. And there's also hair versus hair matches.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, Mexican wrestling's more weird than I thought.
And there's also, I can't remember what they call it, but there's... just for the sake of me being unable to remember its term, but there's midget wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is the legit wrestling, not like, haha, look at the small people, haha.
Yeah, I've heard about that one. They do take it quite seriously as well.
Yeah, I can't remember the specific term for it, but it does exist and it is real and it is legit. Mm. But anyway, yeah, that's enough from Mexican wrestling. It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, let's just cut that limb off over there and just leave it to one side, shall we?
Of course.
Okay. Which is an interesting segue because it does lead us straight into our first story.
Okay.
Yes. A research paper that was published in Science Advance has apparently the people who took part in the research have discovered that we have what's called our inner salamander capacity. Basically, the paper suggests that we might, with more research, be able to regenerate body parts and things like that. We could all be Deadpool or Wolverine, basically.
Not to that extent, though, where we can basically be decapitated and a new body grows from out of our neck. Oh, decapitated neck.
Oh, like Deadpool baby legs or something like that.
Yeah. Stupid joke. They're being really kind of generous with how they define that, because salamanders, you cut off the tail and the tail will grow back, only not as long as it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, the research is only talking about, like, tendons and muscle tissue and stuff like that.
So, like, I know, you're in a Yakuza gang and you mess up. And they say, right, because you messed up, we're taking your finger. Your finger's not going to grow back.
But you could use one of the finger loggers and cut off the long finger, the long finger end. Say, look, my finger's been cut off. Just fill it with fake blood.
Yeah. I don't think the world works like that, Rob, but... it's weird, isn't it, science, how this is a topic of subject for research. I mean, where was this researched again, did it say?
It was a research paper published in Science Advance. Basically, what they're saying is some animals like axolotls, zebrafish and pitcherfish are capable of regenerating different body parts. The axolotl in particular is special because it can regrow its limbs and organs, and even portions of the brain.
As if we need another reason why axolotl is the best thing on this planet. It's just being given to you right there, people. The axolotl is king.
It's basically the Wolverine of the animal kingdom, isn't it?
Only a Wolverine if it was portrayed by a six-year-old Japanese girl. Who's got a penchant for pink dresses.
Which, see, you say that, but now that you've said that, Marvel will make it happen. There will be a clone of Wolverine somewhere, and it'll probably appear in the X-23 comic series. Well,
given that it's Wolverine is an X-Man, and in all known, if everything being equal, it's a possibility.
Yeah, but the X-23 series is all about X-23, Laura Kinney, going around trying to find clones of herself, and she's already got one who she treats as a sister, who goes by the went by the codename Honey Badger, is now going by the codename Scout.
To be honest, honey badgers are far more menacing than wolverines are in the animal kingdom. Honey yes. badgers are the devil, frankly. It doesn't sound like an intimidating name, does it, Honey Badger? It sounds like it'd be sort of cute.
Oh, no,
it sounds like what they'd call Winnie the Pooh in another life. But in reality, Google it right now. Google Honey Badger. It is a monster.
Yes, it is.
But as far as us regenerating things, I don't think it... Maybe in the research, like degenerative diseases, it'll have some sort of practical effect. But as far as just general day-to-day life, knowing that if I graze my knee will grow back bigger, stronger, and with like a knobbly bit. I don't think it's concerning me, frankly.
Oh.
I like my knees knobble-free, frankly.
You don't want alien knees or anything
no,
like that?
No, no. I mean, if there's going to be a queue for new addendums to the human body, I'm going to be at the back of the queue for knobbly knees.
Prehensile tail?
Depends on what sort of tail you're talking about.
We're not talking about robot chicken Michael Bay type.
No. No, no. If you're talking about sort of like a... third arm where I can, you know, but coming out of the back of my spine, then yeah, I'll go for that.
Oh, things just get weirder and weirder. Speaking of weird, right, Tom DeLonge.
I think it's Tom DeLong.
Is it Tom DeLong?
Yeah, the most terrible pop band in the world. Not pop punk. Punk punk doesn't exist. It's either pop or punk. It can't be both.
Just wait. Tom DeLonge, DeLong, whatever it is, he basically is...
a naughty boy.
No, he's not this time. He formed a UFO research organization called To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, or TTSA, right?
Yes.
That train in the background does not like that, does it?
No.
Anyway... other members of TTSA are former Lockheed Martin Martin Skunk Works executive Steve Justice, which is a hell of a name.
Yes, it is.
And former Department of Defense Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, AATIP, or ATIP, official Luis Elizondo. They all played a role in the high-profile release recently of videos purportedly showing military pilots encountering unidentified aerial phenomena.
Yeah, there's lots of ifs in this.
Oh, no, hang on. And in the past few years, the group has also dropped repeated references to their possession of mysterious metal alloys.
Here's the thing, right? There's two lines I want to approach this from. One, it has been, I think it's been historically proven that a lot of the things that were mistook for aliens were in fact research and development machines. They were flying, looking at different means of air travel. And people think, oh, I don't know what that is, alien. And also, why is it that all the people are sort of really strong advocates about aliens? Total nutters.
See, you say that, but this takes a sharp left turn.
Total nutters.
Hang on. Right.
Nutter is Narving for tapped.
These metal materials that they're talking about called, these metal alloys that they're calling metamaterials, which are apparently beyond current engineering technology. Well, TTSA have only just gone and been contracted by the US Army to research alien alloys.
Oh, no. Only in Donald Trump's America could something like that happen.
Oh, no. The acronyms are going to come hard and fast now, right? The group, TTSA group, have announced that it's entered a Cooperative Research and Development Agreement, or CRADA, with the US Army Combat Capabilities Department Command, or CCDC, to advance TTSAs.
I'm not picking on Donald Trump because I'm making some sort of political point. I'm just saying his time as President of America has been weird. And this is just a tip of the weird. Listen to Literary Loitering on this network, just like an inkling of the weirdness that's been rotating around him.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, giant planetary faces and everything.
Yeah, weird time. But this, I mean, I've said in this show numerous times, I'm not an arrogant enough person to believe that the only thing out there in existence, the only planet out there in existence that has life, intelligent life on, is ours. Because that is beyond arrogant, frankly. Obviously, there's something else out there. If we exist, something else exists. It's the sheer law of averages. Unless all known realities, unless we're the last planet standing, our great, 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 great dinosaur ancestors went off on a great space war and killed all the other planets. And then one of the other planets thought, we're not having this. So they sent their doomsday weapon. They sent their doomsday weapon to attack this. The planet that destroyed them, and that doomsday was the thing that destroyed all dinosaur life on this planet. So we started again from zero. It's basically right. Basically, what I'm suggesting is, what was that name, that Douglas Adams thing?
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah. Basically, I live in Hitchhiker's Guide. We're the idiots at the end of the galaxy who doesn't know the galaxy has ended. What was I talking about again? Kind of went off on a tangent there, didn't I?
Yeah, kind of like Tom DeLonge and the rest of his group.
At least my tangent has some sort of coherent sense to it. Unless I'm not like a member of an ex-boy band pop punk band who decides that he's like an alien investigator now.
Yeah, but you did mention Doomsday Weapon.
Yes, I did.
Which is a great segue. Because...
No.
Because... And this is... Right, back in 2014, 60 Minutes did a segment... Right, about a nuclear control center in America, okay? And basically they highlighted certain deficiencies in the control systems and the structure of the nuclear weapons in America, or how the actual computers work and things like that,
mm-hmm.
Right? Spin on a little bit later to the U.S., where are we? To a defense tech news site called C4ISMET. Yes, C4ISMET, right?
I think I've heard of them, yeah.
They report that the Strategic Automated Command and Control Systems, Strategic Automated Command and Control System, or SACS, yes, wait, the communication infrastructure that transmits emergency action messages for nuclear command centers, is finally, after that 60-minute segment 5 years ago, they're finally ditching the floppy disk. And we're not talking about the small floppy disk. We're talking about the big old floppy
disk.
Like,
what is it, like the 8-inch floppy disk?
You know the one that's like the size of my head?
And they're bigger than that. Like those old floppy disks. Yeah, yeah, I remember those floppy disks. If you looked at it from afar, you'd probably think it was a 7-inch vinyl.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. A 7-inch single.
What they've said is that a lot of the infrastructure that controls the nuclear commands and everything like that are basically running IBM first series computers from the 1970s. Wow.
So basically what they're saying is they've basically been operating the nuclear systems in America with the same infrastructure which made popular movie War Games.
Yes.
So they're using old BBC computers.
Oh no, IBM Series 1 computers.
That's... I can't even grasp this.
The thing is, the 60 Minutes segment came out in 2014, which kind of touched on the fact they were still using floppy disks, and they've only, 5 years later, decided to move away from floppy disks.
I think just reporting on the fact that this is a thing is enough on its own. I don't think any sort of glib comment can really sum up the stupidity of this.
Yep.
And go, ha ha ho ho, isn't that fun? And go on some rant where I start talking about dinosaur wars. But at the end of the day, this is just, it's enough on its own. It's genuinely enough on its own.
For over 28 years, Aflac has been a champion, donating over $168 million to fight pediatric cancer and blood disorders, including sickle cell disease. This December, Aflac proudly joins 97.1 Wash FM and Children's National Hospital for the annual Wash for Kids Radiothon. Mark your calendars for December 14th and 15th for a heartwarming 14-hour live broadcast where you can join Aflac in their efforts to support the miracle work happening at Children's National. Save the date, tune in, and be a part of something extraordinary with Aflac.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Thanks for checking out one of the podcasts in our merry little family. We really do appreciate it. Podcasts aren't all we do. We also make strides into the world of video. If you like what you've heard and want more, then head on over to YouTube and search for The Geek Show. On our channel, we have video game and low-budget tech reviews, video game chatter in Press X, animation discussions in Keyframe, movie visual essays in Shortcuts, needlessly nerdy lists with Listomania, interviews from our travels, and much, much more. The future's bright, and who knows what else it holds, so don't forget to search for The Geek Show. Subscribe and click that notification bell to stay up to date.
Moving on to robots.
Okay.
More horrible, hellish things, right? There's a company in London, a robotics company. They're an outsourcing company called Geomic, right? G-E-O-M-I-Q. And for £100,000, you can... Well, how do I explain this? You can license your face to be used on a humanoid robot.
This has got doppelganger nightmare written all over it.
Exactly.
Where a married couple, and I say, they just had the relations come downstairs. I says, hang on, what are you doing down here? Wait a minute. Was that the robot? And then the robot and the husband go on this really long, drawn-out process of, am I the machine or am I the person? And they end up killing each other. And a rain-soaked roof on the top of New Orleans or something. And then Udo Kier.
This is a really futuristic setting where New Orleans has a roof.
And then Udo Kier talks about raindrops in the... No, tears in the rain. Oh, no, it wasn't Udo Kier, was it? Oh, it was the Dutch one. name for... Yeah, anyway, let's get off that. But this is really weird. I mean, the idea of Robot Wars, where the robot has your face, that's terrifying, isn't it? Because I'm assuming they're on about sort of humanoid robots, aren't they?
Yeah, sorry, I made a slight mistake there. Geomic is just an outsourcing company. The robotics company hasn't been named.
Still, I'm assuming the robots will have humanoid features, so it's not like a toaster with your face on it, because...
Yeah. Yep, the robots will.
Like a Hoover. Henry the Hoover, only Steve the Hoover, because it's got your face in it now.
Oh, God, can you imagine, though, if they put Henry's face on all those robots?
Well, that'd be...
terrifying.
Positively nightmarish, wouldn't it? But, yeah, I don't understand why. I mean, fair enough, technology of robots, it has this idea of the uncanny valley, doesn't it, where it looks close enough to be human, but it's slightly off.
I've just realised.
But if it's... The problem isn't the likeness. The problem is that you're trying to present something which has no soul, which has no humanity, as something which has soul and humanity.
Yeah.
It's like looking at Fern Cotton. Fern Cotton's like a very good imitation of a human being, but she's not one. But
I was literally about to say, people like Fern Cotton and Danny Dyer have £100,000. They could afford this.
No, I think that happened before, Rob. They're already the robot doppelganger. Because neither of them have any humanity or soul. Have you looked at? Are you looking into Fern Cotton's eyes, and all you see is a deep, dark void of nothingness?
Is she like one of those dolls where if you lay it flat, it closes its eyes? If you stand it up, it opens its eyes.
Yeah.
And she's got to draw. She's like that character from Toy Story 4.
Yeah, I can't remember Toy Story 4 very much. But yeah, this is a bizarre story. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, somebody who wants a robot. I mean, personally speaking, if I wanted a robot, let's just say the hypothetical future where the idea that we'll have robot assistants, robot butlers, robots that do things for us instead of like person-to-person thing. The idea that has been floating around where it's suggested that work isn't going to be of the future. People aren't going to work in the future.
Mm.
I don't know if you've heard that. So the idea of the people who help us, the people who do stuff, do we want them to look like us, or do we want them to look different enough from us so we have some sort of detach?
See,
because personally, I want them to look like robots because I don't like the idea of something that looks like us but is completely different. It's too...
See, this is where...
Weird. Yeah.
This is where it gets strange, because you have movies where they have the humanoid-looking robots. I mean, the robots still look like robots, but then you...
androids, isn't it? Androids come into that too.
The thing is, they're always kind of nightmarish scenarios, but the movie that I want to touch on, where it posits a very different idea, is Bicentennial Man. See,
humanoid, but not.
No, but the thing is, I have a really soft spot for that movie because it actually looks at the whole robotics thing from a completely different angle. You have a robot who's basically become self-aware.
It does look like a person. It does have a humanoid-looking face, but it's roboticized.
It's very roboticized. It's a very roboticized Robin Williams. But what I love about that movie is that it has a very gentle approach to this whole idea of a robot becoming human. It's not aggressive. It's not in your face.
Yeah, there's not enough of that, is there?
Exactly. So, it's basically positing an idea that there could be a peaceful transition, that robots, if they become self-aware, could want to be like us. And there may be a process for that's very pacific, that's very peaceful for that. It'd be the humans pushing back against the robots, not the other way around.
Humans pushing back against something which isn't their fault. Said so. They've never done that before.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, frankly, I want my robots to look like robots. The idea of a robot, because you could potentially have a robot of yourself.
Yeah, I know.
I could not find a more creepy thing.
I'll be honest, I would be more terrified of...
Because imagine you're sat eating your cornflakes and somebody walks in the room wearing your face. How scared would you be?
I wouldn't be scared. I'd just be thinking, crap, more trouble.
Isn't that scared, though?
No, because I'd be looking at the face on the robot and going, I can get into enough trouble by myself. I don't need someone else with my face running
around.
Would
it be like that scene from the end of Scott Pilgrim where it's supposed to be like the evil twin, but they end up becoming besties?
Yeah, it would be like that, would it? You know me, right?
Okay.
If it was a robot with my face, the first thing we'd do is have a good old natter, right? Play some video games. What I'm more terrified of is, Boston Dynamics had that big proto Cylon type thing that they
wasn't
had.
That that dog that could run 30 miles an hour and throw breeze blocks.
Not the dog, the big one that looked like a proto Cylon had the flashing red light.
Like, vaguely,
yeah. That I'd be more terrified of if something like that walked in with just a flashing red light.
Hey, it's like a questionnaire, isn't it? I mean, it's probably not one for our podcast. I mean, what should a robot look like? Should it be humanoid? Should it be robotic? Which is interesting. It's an interesting debate, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the Ukraine.
Of course. natural segue.
Anyway, the Ukraine seems to be going through some hard times because of what's going on with Russia, but we're not going to go into that. What we are going to go into is Chernobyl, the radioactive reactor Chernobyl. They've opened it to tourists.
People have been going there for a long time.
Yeah, but I mean, as a tourist hotspot, quite literally.
Yeah, didn't like the people who, lots of people who lived there and were present nearby when the reactor blew. Didn't they like, get like, horrible cancer and like, yeah. Passed through generations?
Yeah. But now they're opening it.
And it's not been cleaned up either, has it? Not properly.
No.
Why would you want to go to that? I know there's a thing called, I can't remember the term, I think it's called disaster tourists. Is that the right term I'm thinking of?
Yep.
Where they go to like weird places where really bad, say, natural disasters or man-made disasters or just nasty stuff happened. And I got to admit, there is a degree of interest in that because going to Benidorm again for the 14th year in a row to sit in a deck chair and drink beer, why, you're an adventurous sort, aren't you? But at the same time,
oh my God, fingers, I can see the adverts. Well, fancy a great tan, come to Chernobyl.
Yeah. I don't think it's an internal tan, though, is it? No. It's an internal tan, isn't it? Yeah.
They're opening the reactor control room to tourists in an effort to boost tourism to the Ukraine.
Do they have those costumes? Are they just going to be walking around unaided and sort of normal clothing?
I reckon they'll probably have some kind of costuming, and I don't reckon this is going to be a cheap tour. I reckon you're going to have to pay through the nose for it.
I mean, I'll be honest, there is a part of me which is intrigued just to see what it looks like, because this city was just abandoned.
Yeah.
It had life and it didn't have life. To see that sort of thing where here, a specific moment in time where this city just stopped existing, I think that's really compelling.
Oh, this gets better.
But at the same time, I don't want to go there.
This gets better. The biggest risk, according to the people who were involved in this and according to professionals, is radioactive dust, right? And, well,
yes,
maintenance workers are saying that this radioactive dust contains huge doses of radiation, and just brushing up against something could cause you to have like a really bad dose of radiation.
Yeah, you have to go on one of those sort of I don't know what to call them, sort of like orange costume that you see in sort of sci-fi movies a lot. They've got like this sort of big plane of glass over their head.
Like a hazmat suit type thing.
That's what they call them, yeah. Hazmat suits.
Basically, the maintenance workers, in order to control the amount of dust, they have to spray everything down to keep the dust off, right? So everything has to be kind of moist so the dust doesn't float off and people breathe it in.
One thing I'm more intrigued about Chernobyl is how is it... Is it like... Is it a containment zone? Is it like people stopping you going in? Or if you were Ukrainian, could you just wander in there?
No, I think it's still a containment zone.
Okay.
I think there are still areas where it's a containment zone.
No, I mean the older reactor, that would obviously be the case. But it's a compelling place, isn't it?
Yep.
But not compelling enough to want to risk my life to see it. Frankly.
Well, you know, if you go there, you could be fashionable.
Okay.
Yeah. You could wear a smart shirt.
Is this your way of segueing?
Yeah, it's a horrible way of segueing, I know. It was very cumbersome. Anyway, Spanish fashion brand Sapila have designed their ultimate shirt 3.0.
What happened to 2.0?
Right. It's a special garment that can allegedly reduce the wearer's stress, improve blood flow, and increase energy levels just by wearing it.
I think that asks more questions and gives answers, doesn't it?
See, here's the thing. Apparently, it's bioceramic. It can prevent far infrared. It prevents stains. It doesn't get wrinkles. It's odor-free. It has a stretching capability, max stretch, they call it. It's breathable. You don't get sweat patches. It's easy to care for, and it's sustainable.
How much is it?
Probably a lot, given
that. You see, I'd rather have a lot of T-shirts and just go through them than one T-shirt, which, I don't know, can pick up Wi-Fi on it.
Yeah.
And you get Bluetooth radio through the nipple part. I don't care.
Yeah, it's $98, €89.
Well, that's not as much as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But still, not really worth it, is it? I mean, it's a gimmick shirt.
Well, here's the thing. If it does all those things, does that mean you have to wash it?
No, it suggests that you don't need to, which is kind of nonsense because if you're, no matter what you're wearing, if you are sweaty, what you're wearing is going to pick that sweat up.
Oh, no. It's got bioceramic nanoparticles in the thread that goes to make up the shirt.
Yeah, I just dispute the science of this. Because you can test it all you want, but until you've got the sweatiest person in the world, you don't really know what it's capable of.
I don't know. These bioceramic nanoparticles are apparently... Sorry, I got it wrong when I read the far infrared. It doesn't prevent far infrared. It produces far infrared, which is also emitted by the sun. So by wearing it, you are also wearing the sun.
Spanish. Yeah, well done, Spanish. You really contributed to the world of fashion there.
Yes. So, anyway, we're on to our penultimate story. And everybody loves ice cream, don't they?
Not everybody, but go on.
Okay. What's the weirdest flavour of ice cream you can think of? Or the weirdest popular flavour,
I don't know. I don't know. There's lots of weird flavours in Japan. They make a big deal out of that. I think I remember hearing that seaweed flavour ice cream is a thing in Japan, if I recall correctly, which is fairly weird.
Yeah, it's not as weird as this.
Go on.
Over in Ecuador, right, or in countries like Ecuador, Peru and Bolivia, an Ecuadorian woman has been getting a lot of attention, and apparently it is an extremely popular flavour. She's been getting a lot of attention for her guinea pig flavoured ice cream.
Oh! No! What does guinea pig taste like?
I don't know.
You can't eat a guinea pig. Have you seen a guinea pig? The adorable little things. Oh, no. No. I don't like this story, Rob. It's a bad story. My sister had a guinea pig when she was a kid. There's not much meat on it either. Imagine it tastes mostly fur.
I don't know. Apparently they do eat guinea pigs in certain parts of Ecuador, Peru and Bolivia and places like that.
Yeah, I know. Like where there's like some level of deprivation, they've got to eat what animals are at hand, haven't they?
Yeah.
You can't have like quail in a place where you're like, really severely depriving people of disappearing from the country to have a decent life. You have to eat what you have to eat. But still, guinea pig ice cream.
Oh.
I mean, I'd assume it just tastes like vanilla meat, really. I don't mean that in a literal sense. Most meat seems to taste like chicken.
Except for the meat that doesn't taste like chicken, like pork or beef.
Pork, beef, gammon, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, on my list of things to do before I die, gammon-flavoured ice cream is not on the list. I mean, some people are living that lifestyle of being a gammon ice cream, but That's a different story altogether. I mean, Piers Morgan is the king of the gammons. And, you know, he needs a bit of ice cream to cool down.
Yeah.
That's my lesson for today.
Yeah.
Have some ice cream, Piers Morgan, and stop being such a gammon.
Yes. Anyway, final story. And this involves Andy Serkis. In one of his most challenging roles ever.
That's a statement. He does a lot of challenging stuff.
Oh, this one's brilliant. Kind of.
Okay.
Right. See, you know the Fatberg? You know that giant clump of fat in the sewers of London?
Oh, right. Yeah. I've heard of that. Well, what is it like, things that they've, like those little sheets what you wipe your face with that have like microplastics in, people flush them and they can't biodegrade, so they just clump together. And in certain parts of the London waste system, they've just sort of glomped together to create this big old horrible thing that just blocks the tunnels.
Yes. Well, Andy Serkis is now the voice of the anti-Fatberg campaign.
Okay.
Right. And they've done an advert.
Okay. This advert will be in the link below this show.
Super soft plushies.
They're soft and plush and easy to flush.
Hello. I'm an arsehole. But then we're all arseholes now and again, aren't we? Like when we flush wet wipes down the toilet. Every year, a whopping 93% of London sewer blockages come from wet wipes. It's important to take care of your arsehole and the arseholes of those you love. But afterwards, please don't throw wet wipes in the toilet. Be a good arsehole. Put them in the bin. See what you can flush at beagoodarsehole.com.
Well, in his latest line of roles, Andy Serkis has decided to be a talking sphincter. Which is a funny little segue you got there, wasn't it? I was talking about a talking sphincter at the end of the last news story. So. Wow.
Prescient or what?
Yeah. That's really weird. I don't really know how to follow that. I mean, its existence alone is pretty damn wild.
Exactly. How did the talk Andy Serkis into doing that?
Come on, Andy, be an arsehole. and then he became an arsehole. Wow.
When I read the story, I was thinking, is this just voice acting, or has he actually done any mocap for it?
Yeah, it's just a talking asterisk. No. Yeah, asterisks.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Like a squinting, squirming asterisk. Very clean asterisk.
No. Asterisk. Asterisk is the comic book character.
Well.
A squinting, squirming asterisk.
Well, maybe he had some bad mead. And he's just in the toilet, where the guy who's the big muscly one, whose name I can never remember.
Obelix
is just about doing his business. Well, Asterix is squirting one out because of the bad meat he had and the bad maid. So on that note, I don't think I can really... This was another one where its existence is enough.
Yes.
Its existence is enough. Everything you say beyond that is just it's just icing on the guinea pig flavoured ice cream. Hundreds of thousands on the guinea pig flavoured ice cream.
Yes. Anyway, that's your lot for today.
Yes. Bit of an announcement at the back end of the show. The Geek Show is, I don't know if we're gonna be releasing an audio version of it as well,
it
most certainly will be coming a video primary show, a video primary bit of content. So if that sounds like fun, I mean, admittedly, the context of the show will be changing slightly to accommodate that change in format, but it will still be the same Geek Show it has been for a long time now. So if you like this, you will like that. So if you want to get on board with that, as well as all the other things we do, please do check out our YouTube. So go to YouTube, you know where that is, you know how to do that. and just search for The Geek Show. You'll see our logo and subscribe. There'll also be other things like Press X, video game reviews, other bits and pieces. Plenty to keep you engaged and on board on that. So there's that little announcement. Until then, there won't be another one of these traditional audio ones, I'm assuming, until that kicks off. I have been Lanoir.
And I've been Rob.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. We will see you next time as well, yes.
Yes, we will.
For over 28 years, Aflac has been a champion, donating over $168 million to fight pediatric cancer and blood disorders, including sickle cell disease. This December, Aflac proudly joins 97.1 Wash FM and Children's National Hospital for the annual Wash for Kids Radiothon. Mark your calendars for December 14th and 15th for a heartwarming 14-hour live broadcast where you can join Aflac in their efforts to support the miracle work happening at Children's National. Save the date, tune in, and be a part of something extraordinary with Aflac.